Roscoe, Delhi, Sydney, and Boyceville. TimberlandProperties.net, 845-586-3321. 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's, designed as a space to support a vibrant and active artistic community nestled within the Catskill Mountains. 1053 Main Street Gallery presents Hidden Gardens, an exhibition of works by the artists of Ad Hoc Projects, a collective of 13 artists striving to bring challenging and provocative diverse works to the Catskills. On view through March 20th. Information about the gallery and upcoming exhibitions at 1053maingallery.com. The Arc Bowl and Barbecue, Route 28 in Arkville, New York. A 120-seat, restored 1960s-era vintage 8-lane bowling alley, barbecue joint, saloon, and music entertainment venue. Featuring a slow, smoked and grilled barbecue menu. The Arc Bowl and Barbecue, available for all types of social events, including weddings, birthday parties, and work gatherings. Details at thearkbowl.com.
Hi, this is Arnie Schwartz, host of Talk of the Town on WIOX Roxbury. I'm also board chair at Margaville Hospital. I have some important news about new jobs at Margaville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center. The hospital and the residential care center have an immediate need for experienced and newly graduated registered nurses, LPNs, and certified nursing assistants. New positions are now open, offering competitive salary and benefit packages and significant sign-on and retention bonuses. Learn more at jobs@hahv.org. jobs@hahv.org.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable TV Channel 20 on the campus of SUNY Delhi at 107.5 FM, worldwide at WIOXradio.org and on any mobile device, radio FM app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
Doing well. Still maple sugaring, but it's been a sweet year so far, season so far. It just really started for me in Central Ulster County, but I'm looking at the forecast, and I got to tell you,
not good.
It's not looking good.
No.
Next week, we need freezing nights, right, to increase pressure inside the tree with warm days, and those lows now are consistently 4 to 6 days in a row above freezing, so that usually signals the end.
Yeah, even where I'm at in western part of, or central part of Delaware County, at 1,700 feet, the lows are, they're hovering. They're right at 32, 34, so it can go either way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 4 days in a row, 5 days.
Yeah, and the trees can run for 2 days without freezing, I find. But that third day, they start to turn yellow.
Yeah, and they slow down, and the sap, you're right, sap quality goes down, sugar content drops. Yeah. Not worth doing.
Yep.
But, I don't know, so far I've only boiled 3 days. I just tapped on Monday. And I've bottled about a 1 3/4 gallons. So for me, that's really good. Last year, I had a slow year. You would be constantly boiling. I would go home and have like 3 gallons I'd dump on the ground. And last year, I made over 50% of my year in the last 4 days of the season.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And now I'm kind of doing the opposite. Seems like I'm making it all in the beginning, so we'll see.
I'm hoping for a good next 7 days or so. That's what I'm hoping. We'll see. Today, there might be, this might be sap snow today.
Yeah, I know. It's been just above freezing all day, 33, 34.
Hovering there. So we'll see when I get back after the show. But tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham. Gary, how's it going?
It's going great.
What have you been up to?
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Try to get up every week and work on the woods. I just love to get out, so that's been real good. Live down in North Jersey, so it's a little bit of a drive, not much. Work down there, and just try to get up here and get away from things.
Yeah, Gary's been a Catskill Forest Association member since 2016, I believe. And I first went there, and his forest was one way, and his forest is a lot different today. And that's what I wanted to talk about and kind of get at, you know, the changes you've made, which I think are highly positive.
Yeah, I think it's coming along real well. I had kind of started before I met you, kind of knew what I was doing, but wasn't really sure. So when you came up and went through it, it worked out real well for me because I had a lot of time that next 2 years, and so I spent a lot of time up there with a chainsaw. So it's come a long way. Released a lot of trees, did a lot of hinge cutting, still learning about that, of course. Kind of like the hinge cutting in the spring and winter, they seem to last longer.
Is that right? Yeah.
I think so, yeah, because a lot of them that I realized that I did in August and later in the summer, they seem to die out. You know, they'll last for the year, and that's it. So it's been interesting, but I've got a lot of trees released, a lot of oak trees, and I have a great oak forest, but a lot of competition in there. So, and I got a lot more deer around now. And last year we had more turkeys around there, too, for the first time in a while, and I don't know if it's because of the cutting or it's just one of the cycles that turkeys go through, because when I first bought the property, there was no turkeys.
That's good to hear, because there's a lot of pessimism surrounding turkeys right now across the United States with their habitat shrinking and their numbers falling suit. Are you hearing that, John?
Yeah, I am. Doesn't matter really where you listen to, but it seems like brood success is poor, no matter what you're talking about. A lot of funding out there for different agencies to put habitat monies towards brood success, but it's still, wet years really does it. You know, the weather really does them in. But yeah, I've heard the same thing.
What got you interested in the woods and stuff? You put a lot of effort, I can tell, into doing what you do. So like, what's your deal?
I always loved hunting. My dad grew up on a farm and was a hunter.
Farm in New Jersey?
So, yeah. And he always loved to hunt in New York State, and that's how I ended up buying a piece of property. I think it was about 78. I just wanted a place to get away, deer hunt, and that's why. So I bought 30 acres at no road frontage, just had a right-of-way into it, and it was perfect. Built a little cabin.
Yeah.
There was, talking about turkeys, there was no turkeys back then. I guess that was the early 80s or sometime around. I guess the state started introducing them, and they just came on like wildfire. The turkeys up there was just insane.
Yeah.
And then they started to disappear. I don't know. Last year I had more of them around. The last couple of years before that, I tried turkey hunting and just gave it up because I never even had a tom near the property. You know, you'd maybe hear one in the distance, But they were never up on that property there. So I don't know if there's more turkeys around. And I wonder if a lot of that has to do with predators. Because I think, you know, years ago, too, you used to have more people trapping and whatnot. And I don't think that exists much around there. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Of course, the wet springs are certainly a part of it with broods.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I don't know where I heard it. And I'm trying to remember what state it was, but it was on a podcast I listened to this last week that someone mentioned that a state agency had a raccoon release program.
Raccoon release program?
Yeah, yeah, to reintroduce raccoons into the state in different areas. And now that's the opposite. So raccoons are a major nest predator for turkeys. And yeah. They're everywhere, especially in the Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, raccoons, they seem to ebb and flow, you know. But the habitat to me is not there. I know you guys were just talking about this before, but I am biased towards the habitat. Living in New Paltz, we looked to Delaware County for the best turkeys. Yeah. At least that's what we always heard. And now I know why. I think I know why. Is you guys have the ridges. They can roost on them. Mm-hmm. And then you have those farms down below. And they're just like wild chickens to me.
Yeah.
They dig through the manure. You know, you see them in the fields. And where you and I live, Gary and I live very similar. Well, we're not far from each other. Probably 6-7 miles of bird flies. It's just mature forest, and there's no fields, and there's no agriculture. No. So I never see turkeys where I live. Never. I've seen one Jake, which is a juvenile male, my entire tenure in Olive Bridge. So.
Yeah, you used to see them in the fields around there. The farmers would be putting manure out, and they'd always be in there in the winter. But you don't see that even happening anymore.
It's,
you know, just hay fields and grass.
Yeah. So your primarily focus, your goal was deer hunting for the most part?
Yeah, my primary focus was deer hunting, and I just love to be outside. And when I started using I love to use a chainsaw. It's another excuse to be in the woods for me. And it's a great workout. So I always enjoyed that. But when I started to realize after, you know, you visited the place, really realized I could make a difference because I really never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of left it up to Mother Nature. And, you know, we used to cut. Actually, I started cutting a bit about in the 3 years after I bought it. I had a house and I put a wood furnace in. So it was a good reason to get up and cut. And that's about when the gypsy moss hit. So they were all dead oak we were cutting down back then. You know,
we should probably explain. John, have you been to Gary's Woods? I know you've milled there.
Yeah, I've only driven to the spot that we milled in and drove back out. So, it's what, a quarter mile little drive to get there, and that's it. So, I've not done any walking around.
I mean, let's describe, I guess, what your woods is like when you first arrived.
When I first bought it, it was always a lot of oak, tremendous amount of hemlock, and white pine.
Right. And so the overstory is mainly white pine and oak?
Correct, yeah.
Those are the older, taller trees.
And there was some big hemlock in there. Most of those have died off now. I originally logged it in 2000, and the loggers could take any hemlock. We didn't even mark them, and they took very few. But what they didn't take, most of those big ones have died off in the last couple of years. You know, you could see it. I mean, they were dying then.
Yeah.
So the hemlocks have been dying off, but there's still a tremendous amount of hemlocks on the property. A bit of hickory in certain areas, but it's all forested, and you know there's no open property.
Yeah, what do you think the ages of the trees are? Are they 80 to
probably
90
around
years
there
old?
There are some areas where in the beginning or along the roads that are younger oak. And I think what it was, the farmers had these lots, and they would use them for firewood lots. So they would go in and kind of clear-cut the oak and maple, but they would grow back. So I've got some young stuff, and some of it's, you know, close to 100 years old when you get back in farther that are off the logging roads or the original ones.
So you have an overstory of red oak, some white oak, some chestnut oak.
Yeah.
With white pine, those probably grew in when the farm was abandoned 8 decades or more ago. And then beneath that is a lot of hemlock, black birch. Is there black birch? There's a lot of black birch.
Not
there?
A real lot.
Red maple, maybe?
More red maple
more
than
red
birch,
maple.
Black birch.
So they're shade-tolerant trees, and they're coming up underneath. This is a very typical thing occurring throughout the Catskill Mountains.
Yeah.
So if you do nothing, you know, we've talked about this before, it just swallows up the oak. Now, as a deer hunter, or really a wildlife manager, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You want the oak, right?
You need the oaks in there. You know, when, and the only, the real good hunting up there is, or you get more deer on the property when you have a good oak crop that goes into hunting season, which doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
You know, by clearing the oak trees and all that, that will certainly help out, because like this year, we had the black oak produced some chestnut, not a lot, and some white oak. The white oak were fairly good, I think. There was no red oak production up by me. But they were pretty much cleaned out by November 1st. There was no acorn. You could not find an acorn up there. You know, and that's pretty typical.
Yeah. And then what about the undergrowth? How would you describe that?
There's really not much undergrowth there. You know, it's all mature woods. I mean, you get the undergrowth you'll get. I cut a maple down last week. I was up there. It was maybe 4-inch diameter. That thing had to be 40 feet tall. It's just like bean poles, you know, growing up through there. So there's really nothing new really grows. It's only if I clear an area out, you might get some white pine and black birch. I think that's the only trees that would grow. I mean, there's areas that were lumbered 20 years ago, and there's no reproduction there. It's fern. Yeah, I mean, even the black birch and the white pine in those areas, small, because they're small areas, they just don't survive the deer.
So. So let's describe that cutting that occurred in 2000, which is almost 22 years ago now.
Yeah.
What were they targeting then?
We wanted to. I knew I had to open the woods up because I had too much mature wood. So we were, what the forester recommended was taking down some. He would, you know, find clumps of oaks and take out. So there was an opening.
So you had a forester or just a logger or both?
Yeah, I had a forester going there. We marked the trees and. Put it out for bid, which worked out pretty good, but it really didn't accomplish anything, and because they cut all the tops up into pieces, you know, make it nice and clean, which I thought was the right thing to do. I didn't know, and
that didn't meet your goals
it didn't help. Yeah, it didn't help create habitat. It just made these openings where ferns would grow.
Do you find, John? You've heard that with loggers. They want to make it, you know, very tidy. And I think we're talking about this before the show, Gary, that loggers have kind of been conditioned by their customers or their clients or their landowners to, hey, make it look nice and neat. And that might be good aesthetically, but maybe not for wildlife or regeneration or cover or structure. I don't know.
No, definitely not. I mean, what we've learned through cutting is, you know, a mess is best. You get that immediate cover on the ground, right, by leaving that top hole. And if you're lucky, it's creating a natural fence for you. And deer, you know, it's not that they're not going to penetrate through that top to get that seedling if they really want it, but they're lazy, you know, like the rest of us. They're going to eat from the outside in, and if it takes a few years to get to the middle, well, maybe that's a, you know, some successful regeneration, new trees growing up through the center of that top that can make it above deer browse height before it rots away.
Yeah, and that's what we did this time. I just had it lumbered last winter, and the place is a real mess. It looks terrible. All the tops were left, and the guy didn't even really want to do that. He says, down by the road, can I clean them up? I said, absolutely not.
He didn't want to make
No. He,
so what did he say? The locker was like, what, he wanted to lop the tops, huh?
Yeah, he wanted to lop the tops, clean it up. And he said, at least don't you want me to do that by the road? I said, absolutely not. And
no, that's more work for you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, why do you want to do that? It's a lot more work for you.
Did you explain to him why?
Or oh, yeah.
What
yes.
did he say?
And yeah, he got it, and it really worked, because I've had more deer on the property this past summer that spent time on the property. It was a lot of young deer in there. And this winter there was a lot of deer, even though there was no cutting going on. It really did work. And there will be some regeneration, probably, like you just said, because of the tops and these messes that deer will not go in, and when they rot out, you know, they'll maybe, hopefully, some of those trees would be high enough that they can't get to, but it will create some food. The other thing I started this year is using tree tubes, which I'm going to try on some oak seedlings and whatnot. I did some last spring, and it seems to be working.
This is the new, I was just writing about this earlier today. This is the new environmentalism to me, is work. It just takes work now. We can no longer just set it and forget it and kind of just be like, well, we're going to have the wildlife numbers. You know, if we just preserve something, the turkeys will come back or deer. I think those days are over. And from now on, it's just doing work. If you don't do anything, you lose all those mass-producing species like oak. The fruit trees are probably long gone at this point, most of them, because they're the first to get shaded out, like cherry. And if you were lucky, maybe apple, like up here in the mountains. But those get shaded out after a while. So it's just going to take work. Which brings us back to your best friend here, is the chainsaw. So what kind of chainsaw are you running here?
I always had, when I first bought it, I bought a steel. I don't know anything about chainsaws. It was steel Farm Boss 20-inch blade on it, and I used that till about 5 years ago. I got another steel. I think it's a 391. It's probably close to it. I love the old saw more than the new one, the way it cuts and all, but it's just, you know, too much vibration, and you don't have the safety features on it. So, you know, I don't know much. I always had the one chainsaw. I just bought a new Husqvarna, because I've heard you guys talk about them, and I remember my brother had a Husqvarna motorcycle when we were growing up, which was some animal. So I got one of those for a second saw. It might be the first saw, I don't know.
They're both good chainsaws, I don't know. What do you think, John?
Well, it's just what I run is Husqvarna, but, you know, that's just because we have, right? We go to the saw shop that services them, and they treat us well, so we keep buying from them. If the next saw shop down the road had steels and had the same service, we might go there too.
Yeah, it's true. I think they're both good saws. Both good companies. I don't know.
Yeah, and the biggest thing with that now, I never had a chainsaw course or anything. I just, you know, my dad picked it up. And I mean, when I was in high school, I used to go cut firewood for try to sell it and winter and whatnot. I always liked doing that stuff. I did take one a couple years ago, which was great to take for safety reasons. I'm getting a little older. I ought to know a little more about it. And so now I use all the protective gear, which I never had, you know, chaps, helmet.
Yeah.
I won't work out in the woods without them now. But for 50 years, I never had one. Man. Not a great idea, but...
Even with it, you know what? The hardest thing for me is my eyes. It's even wearing a screen, I just... And glasses, somehow dust just always, man, gets in your eyes.
Yeah, the screen for me is not enough. I usually have glasses on and the screen.
Yeah.
Because it just... I wear contacts, so my eyes are very sensitive to that stuff. So I got to wear both, or generally do. But, yeah, safety is a huge thing with that, and it's the number one workman's comp figure in this country, or highest paid, is for, you know, if you're picking a chainsaw up, you're a lumberjack.
Yeah.
Most people never think of it that way, probably.
Before we get into the intricacies of what trees you're cutting and leaving behind and all that, like, what's your day when you're cutting? Like, in your mind, like, all right, I'm going to do this for so long, or is there a certain amount of tanks or like, anything you have in your head about when you stop?
Usually, I find, whether I'm doing firewood or hinge cutting, well, mostly firewood, two tanks of gas, I'm pretty good. And I always, when I cut firewood, I always want to get that wood out of the forest. I got a quad with a little... wagon on it, and that's what I use, you know, which is, makes it fun. You can get right up to them. I don't want to carry them too far or whatever, but it's a lot of work. So usually two tanks of gas doing that, that's a good day for me. You know, hinge cutting, it's a little different. You're not using as much fuel and whatnot, so you know, do 5-6 hours, and that's enough work for me.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham.
Well, I used to wake the morning before the rooster crow, searching for soda bottles to get myself some dough. Run them down to the corner, down to the country store. Cash them in and give my money to a man named Curtis Lowe. Old Kurt was a black man with white curly hair. When he had a fifth of wine, he did not have a care. To ever play the blues. He looked to be 60, and maybe I was 10. Mama used to whoop me, but I'd go see him again. I clapped my hands, stomped my feet, tried to stay in time. He'd play me a song or two, then take another drink of wine. To ever play the blues. Yes, sir.
Leonard Skinner there, and Ballad of Curtis Lowe. This is from The Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham. And so we talked about, you know, why you bought the property and what it was like. So what are you targeting for cutting trees and leaving trees behind?
Well, right now, it's mostly opening up oak trees, because, and I have it all over the property. So that's what I'm trying to do. I like to do it in the winter because everything I bring down, the deer just clean up in 1 week pretty much, which is mostly hemlock and maple. Of course, they eat that any time of year. But it's mostly hemlock that I'm cutting because that's the biggest issue I have around most of the oak trees.
Yeah.
So I work by the road. I have ADD, so I just kind of do it haphazardly at times. I will have a project back in the woods and go do that. Maybe that's a certain tree I want to cut for firewood or get something out. And then I'll look at a tree and say, that poor tree, that needs help. And I'll just go help that tree.
Mm-hmm. What makes you think it needs help?
Because I'll just see the tops just growing around it and how spindly it's looking.
Yeah.
You know, so I know. And the hemlocks are all going to die. The very few of them that look too healthy, you know, but those tops keep growing up. And so that's usually what I'm looking at. Now, I've also looked at, I just started cut some beech that the forester or that they lumbered last time and left. And I kind of fell in love with that wood, the way it dries out. And I know the BTUs is the same as oak.
Yeah.
But it dries out so quickly. I was just impressed. And I got a lot of beech in the back. And there's a bit of it with the black bark disease, I guess.
Beech bark disease, yeah.
Yeah, that's on there. So and the deer eat all that stuff by me. So I think I'm going to start targeting more of that this year. Up by me, they eat that in the summer, even the beech. I found.
Jeez,
yeah. I got some beech in my wood pile this year.
Yeah,
I haven't burned that since 2014, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I've never burned it really, and I actually brought a stump home that I had cut off that the logger left, and I split it about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. These pieces are dry. And it was wet when I split it. That was a nice surprise.
I feel like beech is the best firewood if I had to pick one tree, I think.
Yeah.
Just because, it's like you said, it's the same as sugar maple and red oak.
Yeah.
And just as dense.
Yeah.
But it takes half the time, 1 year to season.
Yeah.
Whereas sugar maple, that is heavy wood when you first got it down. Really heavy. And I'm burning it right now. Remember that I told you that sugar maple? That was an old, old tree on a sugar bush. So it was probably 100 years old.
You took and that home.
It, yeah, from Margaretville to Olive, and it bent my springs of my old truck.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got rid of that truck anyway. But and now I'm burning it right now. That was 2 years ago. It's light. It's not that heavy now once it's dry. But that stuff was heavy as hell, man.
Wow.
Oh yeah. So it's got a lot of moisture to lose. What I'm saying, whereas beech doesn't.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I've never cut a sugar maple. I don't think there's one on my property. All the ash trees are gone. I found one ash tree in the middle of the oaks. That's, I guess, the only reason it survived.
Huh.
But that's the only ash tree, and I've been burning that. One thing I noticed with the ash, it seems to leave a lot of charcoal in my stove. And I've started the last 3 weeks burning oak. And
yeah.
I believe there is a lot less charcoal left.
So you're bashing ash?
Yeah.
So this goes out to one of our listeners.
Yeah. Oh, he's listening.
He hates when we bash ash.
No, I'm burning.
That's fine. It is a great wood, but.
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Yeah.
Concession. No, it's okay.
It's a good burning wood, but I have no more left, literally. It's gone.
He emailed us. He's like, what do you guys, great show, you know, but what do you guys got against ash? It's like, nothing. We're just tired of burning it because we burn it, like, all the time because everyone's ash trees are dying. They have me cut down their trees and have, like, a whole four cords of ash, you know? I like a little diversity in my life.
Yeah, yeah. I had one corner that was all ash, and they all died, so I was cutting those probably three years ago, and that's what I've been burning the last 2 years.
Yeah.
The majority of it. So, yeah, but it's all gone.
Yeah.
And one thing I noticed years ago, I got a turkey. And I don't know if it was spring or fall, but it was loaded. All that was in the gullet of it was ash seeds.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, that's...
Single Samaras.
Yep. And that is another food they're not going to have.
Mm. Okay.
Which, I found them good in grass point. Before, too.
Yeah.
Now you say that.
Is that right?
So it was probably in the fall, then. Yeah. Yeah, because... But, yeah, got no more ash trees. I've got loads of bear on the property now. Years ago, there was never bears around, and I didn't find any oak trees that they bothered this year, which was weird because the 2 years, or several years before that, I found a lot of my oaks that where the bears had climbed up and just ripped apart.
Yeah,
the tops. You know, when the nuts are in.
Terrible pruning job.
In September, yeah.
You see little branches on the ground, right?
Oh yeah, big branches on the ground.
Yeah.
The fall before. I thought a storm went through because I was cleaning this. It was all these dead oak limbs in the road. And I noticed a little claw mark on one. I started looking at them, and it was a bear. And then I realized a bear had climbed up this thing. And
you know what I think saved them? It was the cherry crop this year. Cause hiking the ridgetops, there was bear scat everywhere, loaded with cherry pits.
Yeah.
So I think that they were just up on the ridge. I found that with beech this year, though. I said it once before, but the stand was 500 acres big. I mean, there's just beech, nothing but beech. And most of the mature trees were broke out in this whole stand. It was amazing.
There was a lot of beech nuts.
Beech nuts?
And maybe that's why they left the oak trees alone. I don't know.
Have you ever, so a crop tree is a tree that you leave and that you release from competition, meaning you cut the adjacent tree so it gets more sunlight. Do you ever find a crop tree beech tree that doesn't have the disease on your property that's worth keeping?
Yeah, I got some beech that doesn't. I don't know why. Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
I got some big ones, some small. I got some smaller trees that have it, some big ones that have it, and some don't. But you do find that. The oak trees seem to do pretty well when you open them. Though there was one spot I had where there was a lot of black birch. It was probably the last area that was ever cut for firewood back there. And so it was mostly black birch. There was a few red oak that came up real thin. I cut all the black birch down, but the red oak, there were red oaks, they sprouted all the way up, which I guess that is too much sunlight to them too quickly, I assume. So I guess it's something you should do on a slower basis. I'm not sure.
The USDA did studies on this, and healthier trees are less prone to having epicormic sprouts. That's those tiny little branches along the trunk. But, you can leave a mid-story sometimes to reduce that. But, maybe they're shaded too long. It's tough to say.
And they were shaded, another year I might be able to climb up there and now. Cut them all off and take my tree stand and see if that works. I don't know.
So have you seen the oaks respond well to more sunlight?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing how they do. I a couple of years ago, I don't know, it was 2017 when there was a lot of nuts, or maybe it was one of the years in between. I was going back in, it was the end of September before any leaves had come down, and any place there was acorns, I could look up and see sunlight. Then you could go 100 yards in there and not have any sunlight and not see an acorn.
Huh.
And I went into a couple places where I had released the trees year before, and those trees were loaded with acorns. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. It's very, you can see it happen.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get a good acorn crop up there with what we took out with the lumbering last year, because we took a lot of hemlock out, a lot of white pine, a bit of hickory. So there's, it should really help the oak trees up there. But still a lot more work to do, fortunately.
Yeah, I think QDMA is preaching, NDA now, they changed the name. They're preaching now that 70% of the acorns come from 30% of the trees.
I would believe that from that one time. It was just amazing. Like I said, I was on my quad, and I remember I was cutting a black birch all the way in the back I wanted to get rid of. But there was acorns here. Wherever there was light, some sunlight hitting the ground, there was acorns. And it was always where I had released trees or where they had been in the areas from 20 years ago, those trees that had grown over, so they had sunlight still.
Mm. So what do you mean by 30% of the trees, when you say that?
So the trees with the biggest crown, they're getting the most light, have the energy to produce.
All right.
Not.
So they are saying
by quantity, so by volume, so 70% of the total volume of the crop came from 30% of the stems that are out in the forest.
Yeah. There's more and more studies on the importance of oak for wildlife and everything else, it seems. I mean, you know, I went to a symposium by the Cary Institute a number of years ago, and they're talking about how important oak forests are, but I don't know. It just seems like you hear about it all the time now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and they also, the probably the most valuable wood out there is the oak tree. You know, if you have a piece of property that at some point could be lumbered, you know, that's where the most money is in the oak.
Can be, yeah. Around here, hard or sugar maple.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have any sugar maple. I just red maple and hickory and oak.
Yeah, red maple, they seem like they get to a certain diameter, they start hollowing out anyway.
Yeah.
Not always, but a lot of times, you know, 20 inches or so, they start to get some heartwood rot.
Yeah, that's because oftentimes they're on a poor site. They can take a wider tolerance of poor soils or poor moisture, too much moisture. So
yeah,
that'll affect how long they can survive being a nice timber log.
So if you're just tuning in and you're listening to From the Forest, tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham. Gary is a member of the Catskill Forest Association, and he's been doing a lot of work to improve his property over the last 6 years, 6 to 8 years, and there's definitely a difference. So what about hinge cutting as far as, what you know, can you go into that a little bit as far as choosing trees to hinge cut, when to do it, size of trees?
Yeah, I've kind of realized it seems like the best time is winter or spring. That those trees will survive longer. And, you know, usually it's understory trees, smaller trees, where you may want to, you know, release an oak tree. They'll work if you can get them down. It's, a lot of it in my property is kind of difficult with the oak, with the hemlock trees, because the branches on a hemlock, they make it very difficult to get anything down.
Velcro.
Yeah, the Velcro, correct. Yeah. But it does work, and you know, you will see some of those trees keep regenerating some growth that the deer, I have some of them, and I have some stumps, too.
So for people listening, when you hinge cut, you go two-thirds of the way through the tree.
Two-thirds of the way through.
About waist level?
Yeah, I always do about waist level. It's easier to cut that way. And I have a habitat hook that I use also. Helps you get them down so you don't have to cut as much. You can pull them down with that or push. And I've even used the quad to put a rope on them, a 50-foot rope, and pull them to get them down. I've had to do that at times, and that works. A little bit of work, but it does work.
And your goals with the hinge cutting is to increase?
It's to increase the food supply on the ground, you know, that deer can get to.
Yeah.
And like I said, hopefully you can be releasing trees at the same time.
And you're getting cover.
And you're getting some cover in there, absolutely.
Have you seen any small mammals or birds yet?
I have noticed in places where I've done a lot of cutting, it seems like I see more small birds and stuff around, especially where I've left messes and you get all these branches in the air and whatnot. You get a lot of cover. So I think I see more birds in those areas. I've seen a couple fishers, which I never saw before. So I don't know if they have anything to do with those messes in the woods. But I saw one this year hunting, and I saw one last summer when I was working. I was surprised. I had never seen one before up there. Beautiful little thing.
What do you think, John, about the songbirds, grouse, whatnot, from doing openings, cuttings?
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a grouse on your property, if ever?
Well, you would probably not believe this, but about 5-6 years ago, I had a pet grouse.
Yeah.
He would land on my cabin and just hop around, and then he would go down in the quarry where I cut a trailer, and he would just follow me around for 2 years.
Really?
That was the only grouse I've seen in 30 years up there.
Yeah.
This is the last grouse.
It doesn't really suffice for that. They need dense cover, right? You know, more than 5,000 stems per acre. You're talking young cover.
And we not to confuse people, we talked about density, but before is forest being dense, and it was dense in the overstory. They need dense shrub cover.
Yeah, they need dense understory.
Right.
So they need that cover down low. They're on the ground. They can fly, but it's just for escape. It's not like they fly around the forest. So they're walking around on the forest floor, and they need that dense cover above them from avian predators, right? So the hawks and the owls from above. But, yeah, and anytime you do cutting like that, that's either increasing any type of structural diversity, right? So we're talking about putting trees on the ground. We talked about trying to regenerate growth. So if you've got structural canopy diversity, meaning you've got trees from the understory, midstory, and the overstory, ideally you're going to increase the abundance of bird habitat that's available, because birds are specialists. That's why we can have so many out there. Some only occupy the overstory when they're nesting, some only in the midstory, some only on the understory, and then some move their young to young forests when they hatch, some move them other places. So to have this diverse type forest, you need it, and it's really done only through cutting.
Yeah, vertical structure. So this is, you know, we're talking about this before the show, back at the office, Gary. In forestry school, you know, it was considered a failure if you didn't get any seedlings, right, after a cut. And to this day, it's kind of still amongst foresters that, oh, we did a cutting, we didn't get the regeneration we wanted. In many cases in southeastern New York where deer browse is terrible, you're not going to get any seedlings growing, right? So, but the thing is, I think we got to get out of this mindset is, like, at least you have structure from doing this cutting, you know? I mean, they need some cover. Even that coarse woody debris, laying trees on the ground, I feel like it's improved your property quite a bit, even though seedlings might not be there.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not going to get anything to grow back unless I put tree tubes on them, which I want to try to start doing that with the oak, because you'll see young oak trees in the spring, you know, that from nuts that are growing, but they won't survive. Tree tube may help, and maybe some of these areas I can get a few of those growing, but I have more deer on the property just because of the structure on the ground from the tops and logs, and I've seen them like 10, 15 yards from me just walk by them. They'll be bedded down next to a log, and as long as you don't stop moving, they just stay there. Where they would I never had deer in there like that before because there was no structure on the ground. A couple years ago when I first started cutting, I was doing a lot of brush piles too. And that first year I was cutting 2-3 days a week.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
Your brush piles.
I have brush piles all
over.
You're
like a maniac, man.
Well,
that's a good workout.
That's a real workout. With the hemlock, I wanted some areas to clean up a little bit. But the amount of fawn, I never saw so many fawns in there in that August. Every brush pile would have a fawn bedded down. You know, if you stop, they'd get up and run away. Huh. And like I said, before that, you would not see a fawn back in those woods. So it's all structure. That's the one thing I can do.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk that makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that have dried up on some lines. Keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on the columns now that binds me. Or something that somebody said because they thought we fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing nor forgiving when I walk along some railroad track and find moving on a back road by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gently on my mind. Dipped my cup of soup back from the gurgling crackling cauldron in some train yarn. My beard a roughened coal pile and a dirty hat pulled low across my face. Cupped hands round a tin can, I pretend I hold it to my breast and find that you're waving from the back road by the river of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
All right, that's Gentle on My Mind by Dean Martin, believe it or not. And this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is forest improvement for deer and wildlife with Gary Graham. And Gary, you want to say something about firewood?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that I believe it's a carbon-neutral way to heat your house, which, if you believe in climate change, carbon-neutral is a good thing. If we're using a fossil fuel, that's carbon going in one direction. Firewood, that tree has come from the ground 30 years or whatever. That carbon has come out of the air. You're burning it. It may be going back in. But if you're doing it the correct way in the woods, you're releasing trees that are going to create more carbon themselves. They're going to grow faster. And a perfect example was last year, when John was cutting some boards for me, and he cut this tree, and he said, "When did you log this last night?" I said, "About 20 years ago." And you could see it in the growth rings. He even has a picture of it. And it's amazing. So by cutting that one tree that was next to it, this tree was released. The growth rings were so much bigger, it was taking in more carbon. So you didn't lose carbon growth by cutting this tree. And when a tree rots, that carbon goes back into the air anyway. Now, it may take 20, 30 years, but that carbon is going back in. Not the same with fossil fuels. So I think that's a big benefit for burning, heating with firewood.
Yeah, it feels pretty good to be burning firewood right now with oil prices, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
You know, nothing is perfect. There's particulates with firewood. But, you know, whenever they give these numbers, meaning they like NYSERDA or New York State, anyone out there who criticizes firewood, it's very difficult to do because everyone burns differently. There's always a better way to burn, right? And how you burn your firewood, how you season it, when you damp down everything, it matters. And then, you know, and then there's all these alternate benefits to burning firewood. Like all the things you're doing in your woods,
mm-hmm.
Like opening up oak trees for wildlife. I mean, how do you quantify that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Into the mix. How about staying healthy? Now you're not going to the gym. Maybe that's bad for the gym owner, but you don't have to drive there. You know, you don't have to take time. And I mean, there's nothing better than dragging brush or hauling around a chainsaw. You can't replicate that in a gym because it's not linear. It gets you in such good shape. And as a person who used to be active his whole life and work out in a gym and outside of a gym, it's much better using a chainsaw. As long as you don't cut your arm off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why you go go take a course. But it is a great workout. I used to work out in the gym all the time. I don't do it anymore. I make sure I get up once a week. And just dealing with firewood, even in the winter, you're splitting it. You got to bring it in the house. It is a lot of work, but it's... If you go to the gym, you're working out, you're paying somebody to work out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a much better workout.
And it's tangible. It's tangible.
Absolutely.
Right? You can see what you did afterwards.
It's absolutely rewarding to me. And you're creating something. And like I said, I think it's good for... It's definitely good for the environment. You do it the right way. It's good for the woods. And... you know, being carbon neutral, I think that's a big thing. We talk about climate change all the time.
Yeah, we're kind of circling back again on this new environmentalism, as I'm calling it, is we can't just, you know, hey, just preserve it, set it, and forget it. I feel like going forward, it's just going to take work to make things better, to improve your forest. Gone are the days where you just, you know, you buy it up, you put an easement on it or whatever, or the state buys it, or Open Space Institute buys it, or the Nature Conservancy, and we just forget about it. I feel like it's just going to take work from now on. You know, you got to get out there and cut once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm doing, and I enjoy it. And it's being proactive, which I wasn't for many years. I just let it go, and, you know, and honestly didn't have a lot of time in parts of my life with kids and whatnot, you know, and that happens. But it being proactive is good when you know what you're doing.
Gary, how many trees do you think you cut for the benefit of one?
How many trees? Probably 4 to 5 trees.
Per one.
For one tree sometimes. Sometimes it's only two, but it could be up 4 or 5 trees. Probably average about 3 trees.
Cool.
Yeah.
My next article that I wrote for this newsletter, I labeled it 100 to 1. That was my extreme example.
100 to 1, geez.
In the article, I talked about 10 to a 100 to yeah. 1. But, you know, I was talking about individual stems. You can get a lot of stems if you're talking small young trees. But 10 to 100 to 1, I think, is my average for trees that I either release or open up room to plant. And why do we do that? You know, we just talked about it for an hour.
Yeah, and yeah, it would depend on the age of trees and whatnot. Now, when I first bought that place, right where my cabin is, they had, and I don't know, about 20 years before that, I guess they had clear cut it. And so there was loads of maple oak. There was some big hemlock in there, not too much, but it was loads of all these shoots. And we had a real bad winter. And I knew I should probably get rid of all that maple. It was way too many trees. It was, like you said, I don't know how many I released, but I went down and cut every maple down. And I never saw so many deer in my life, you know, because it was 2-3 feet of snow on the ground or something. I don't know. I couldn't even drive into the place. But in places where I did that, in a couple places back then, because it was all these red maples coming up, and now they're just solid oak. And now I got too many oak trees, so I got to cut. I've been cutting a lot of oak.
Yeah, when you see ones. The benefits of it, then you believe it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we got. And I guess what you're trying to say, John and Gary, is quality over quantity, right?
That's right.
And that's all the time we have on From the Forest. And next week is Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, third Wednesday. And have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.